toward Pentecost 22 with today's set of readings, which means in the 20s in Pentecost, we're pretty darn close to the end of the church year, and somehow the weather outside is not saying that, and I don't know that I'm quite ready for that yet. Even the weather in here is not saying that. We've got a very rich set of readings for this day. The New Testament, the Gospel reading, is Mark 10:35-45, marvelous section with two major mini-sections, one which is talking to the disciples about whether responding to their question, their request, their desire to be one at the right hand and one at the left. And the response is to say, can you be baptized with my baptism? Can you drink of my cup? And then the second section, not so much directed in a response way to the disciples, but in an illustrative way, talking about what it means to be great, to be counted in the kingdom. Those of you who want to be great must be servant. For the Son of Man gave his life, came not to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom for many. Jesus, both the giver and the model of giving, of the self-sacrificing life. That last phrase, gave his life as a ransom for many, is the phrase that really links this passage with Isaiah 53, the Old Testament lesson, which ordinarily we would think of more as a Lenten reading. However, the link is here for a different reason. The many, the servant, and even though the word ransom is not a direct carryover, the meaning is the same. So let's look at Isaiah 53:10-12. Prof. Seleska ought to be the one up here because he wanders around with pleasure and at leisure in this section of Isaiah. But he's got his mouth full, so what could I say? When you look at the three verses that are there, clearly they are very familiar to us because they come as capstone of that marvelous section that begins at the end of chapter 52 on into that full, beautiful hymn of 53. When you look very closely at these three verses, you have the sense that it's not all of one package here, and what I mean by saying that is that in verse 10, Yahweh is spoken of in the third person. In verse 11, however, Yahweh is spoken to, actually, in the second person. And Yahweh also speaks, verse 10, Yahweh is spoken of in the second person. Verses 11 and 12, Yahweh speaks in the first person. So we've got a kind of a convoluted section here. And the text is no easier. It's a very difficult section. It seems to me that it might make sense, first of all, to pick out some key words and phrases that are here that we can pick up then as we move through the text. For one thing, verse 10, second word, chafetz, desire, will, purpose. Can be used sometimes with an emphasis on desire, pleasure, that kind of desire. Sometimes, however, and my sense is that here it is that way, it is less a matter of pleasure and maybe more a matter of intention. In fact, you look at different translations for second half of this verse, and you don't even have the word desire there. It's the will of God or the purpose of God, the intention of God. What we're talking about, in other words, in verses 10 to 12, is not just what happened to somebody out there. We're talking about something willed, purposed, intentioned, desired by Yahweh. There's more at work here than just the fate of one individual. Secondly, there's a heavy preponderance of the concept of sin. And we, in fact, you look at the Hebrew, you've got three different synonyms. They're all here. What we're really talking about is how the problem of sin and sinners is dealt with, and how this relates to the pleasure, the desire, the will, the purpose of Yahweh. Over and above that, we've got three occurrences of the word many, rabim. Where do we have it? 11b, 12a, and 12a, b, c, d, e, or a, b, c, d, e, right. Used in three different ways. The first, many, talks about those who will be justified or made righteous. The second, many, in its position over against the parallel word, is ordinarily, and in fact I've found no translation that does it any differently, is translated the great, which is a legitimate translation, but certainly a different usage. And the third usage, down at the end of verse 12, many, here is in parallel with the sinners, the rebellious ones. A strange, but I think a striking use of many in lots of different connotations, and it seems to me that each of these deserves to be picked up and looked at when you go to the gospel that talks about Jesus, the Son of Man, coming not to serve, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. Many what? We'll talk about that. Over and above that, the word his life, nafsho, his soul, his spirit, ordinarily, however, better seen as his life, occurs here three times. Ordinarily in connection with guilt, anguish, being emptied, being bared, being stripped, a suffering kind of a connotation. Not unlinked with the fate of the many or the sin that the many bear. And then a long run of very crucial verbs that are here. To make righteous, to bear, and there are two different words for that. To empty oneself, to be numbered, to intercede or intervene. There are some heavy duty, theological, salvific words that are here. Doesn't make the text any easier, but it means that we really are treading on really sacred territory here when we go through this. Let's try to go through the text and make sense of what we can. If you've looked at all in different translations, you realize there's really problematic stuff. Even the way verses are split up is problematic. Let's go at it. And Yahweh chafetz, to desire, to will, to intend. Yahweh desired, infinitive, pl, to crush him. Strange thing for Yahweh to desire, to crush him. The next word is the first of the bunch that is, and you can tell by the footnotes, hard to make any sense of. As it stands, it's a hifil of chala, which means to, in the kal, it means to be weak or sick. In the pl, then would give a causative sense. And if that stands here in connection with the dak o, he desired to crush him, to bruise him, to make him suffer. That kind of translation, however, transforms a hifil perfect into an infinitive. It's not what we have here. It supplies a pronominal suffix, which we don't have here. And so this is just a problematic word. It does, however, stand in good harmony with that word to crush. Yahweh willed to crush him, to bruise him. The next stands almost over against what is there. The verb tasim is second person. It is not third person. You made him place him, make him, his life, as Asham, a guilt offering, or a guilt offering victim, that is, the sacrificial victim. The im is the problematic word. Does it mean if? It makes for a funny translation. If you do that, of course he did that. When? That, do you really want, however, a chronological sequence here? Is the question one of timing? Or is it by extension then a because? Because you make him a, make his life into a sacrificial victim. He, therefore, if that is the right sequence, the right translation, will see seed. Presumably his seed, or his posterity, or his future. He will lengthen, arak, to be long, hifil, to prolong, or to make long. He will lengthen days, that is, his life will be long. And chefetz, the same root we had above. There it was, the verb. Yahweh is pleased to, takes pleasure in crushing him. Now becomes a noun. The pleasure of Yahweh, or the desire, or the will, the intent, in that sense, the purpose of Yahweh, will succeed. That's the word for come to proper ending, will succeed, will be fulfilled in his hand. A bit of an ambiguous statement here. Does that mean that in his hand, in his time, he will see success? The will of Yahweh is that he success will be in his hand. He will see success, long life, and so on. Or is this looking down what we have below? The will of Yahweh will succeed through his hand. That is, through the means of this one. He is the agent of Yahweh's will and is the one through whom Yahweh implements his desire. On down. Me'amal. Amal is a word for anguish, pain, suffering. From the suffering of his soul, or given the suffering of his soul, or NIV translates it after, that kind of from, the suffering of his soul, he will see. There's no object there. And that makes this a little difficult to understand meaning. If you look at the footnote, you see that some of the versions have inserted the word light, which gives it the same sense of promise that you had above. Length of days, he will see his seed, he will see light. Or maybe it is intentionally left open like that. He will see, namely, that this is the chefetz of Yahweh, the will of Yahweh that's going on here. He will see, he will understand, he will be satisfied in his knowledge. In his knowledge of God's will. In his knowledge that this is the intent of God that is happening in his life and with his life. Some of the translations, some of the versions disconnect that word knowledge, however. NIV does that. Disconnects the word knowledge from this section of verse 11 and connects it with the next phrase, the making righteous phrase. I don't know that there's too much textual support for that. For whatever reason, NIV has gone that way. On to the next phrase. Hifil of tzadak, to be righteous, to make just. He will make righteous. Tzaddik, that's a noun, the just one, or a just one. The article really isn't there. Clearly, you do have a repetition of the root here. My servant, Is that mean my servant the just one, or my servant is just? My servant the just one will make just. He will make of the many, la rabim. He will make of the many what he is. Okay? He will make of the many what he is. He will, my servant, the righteous one, will make the many righteous. And their guilt he will bear. And those two phrases need to be linked very, very closely together. How is it that he makes righteous? He bears guilt. What does it mean that he bears guilt, their guilt? It means that he makes them righteous. The point is not just that he is righteous. There's something going on here which is more than just him. It is them. Their guilt is taken. Therefore, verse 12, we're back to promise talk here now about that suffering one. Therefore, I will portion out. Chalak is a word familiar to anyone who reads from the entry into Canaan. Those portions that were given the tribes. I will portion out to him among the many. Or here given the parallel word below, which is the word for strong. Here the meaning likely would be better conveyed if you say the great ones. I will give him a portion among the great ones, and with the strong ones, he will have a portion, or shalal is prey, or booty, or maybe in a generic sense, reward. He will have his reward among the prosperous, among the great ones, the strong ones. Down below, tachath asher, often a way of saying because. Given the fact that under the presupposition that, if you want to maintain the tachath literal meaning, because, he'era, ara means to be bare or to be naked, hifil, because he bared nafsho, his life, his self, himself to death. He stripped himself to the point of death, or the same word is not used here in the Septuagint, but it sure recalls what you have in Philippians 2. He emptied himself. It seems a very similar kind of image. He emptied himself. He laid his life on the line to the point of death, and with sinners. Nemna. Mana is to count. To number. Niphal, he was numbered, likely with a bit of a hithpael, a bit of a reflexive sense. He allowed himself to be counted among. We saw him as stricken by God, that same sense. He allowed himself to be listed among, to be numbered among those who were clearly the rebellious ones, the sinners. And he, sin, rabim, of many, nasa, he bore, he took the sin of many, and for the rebellious ones, the same word we had above, for the rebels, he will, this is now an imperfect, the last three above this have been perfect, He will intercede, the word is used in some cases that way, or he will intervene, or he will serve as mediator, or he will somehow serve for those who are clearly the sinners. We've got, to summarize, capstone of this marvelous last of the suffering servant poems. The import of the earlier part is to say, what you see is suffering, what you got to know is that he's suffering for you. come to the end, and that's there. In addition, there is the message that what you see is suffering. What you need to know is that this is will of God, not by accident. It's not a tragedy. Will of God, God will reward. There's not the end of the story either. And as a result of this one, there will be those, the many, who will be made righteous. Those who will have one who intervenes or intercedes for them. There are those whose sins are taken up, taken away. There are those who stand in a new kind of relationship because of this one. And that too is will of God. Indeed, you don't get to will, purpose, desire of God unless you get to this suffering one. When you get to that suffering one, then you come to the righteousness that is promised by God, which makes for an easy jump into that marvelous gospel lesson that we have. He did not come to be served. He came to serve, to the point of giving his life as a ransom for the many, which it seems to me is code word for a pretty inclusive sense of all. Okay? Yeah. Well, that leaves the verb yatsdik basically without an object then, which makes it read kind of funny. It is. It is truncated, and the grammar doesn't fit right. And at the same time, the bottom line stuff is there. Because of this servant, the many will are the receptors of the righteousness that this righteous one gives. Some of us are plowing our way through the book of Job together, and as I was working on this today, I was thinking of kind of parallels in some ways between Job and the suffering servant, and there are a lot, because Job suffers also through no fault of his own. He suffers innocently, just like this suffering servant, and in fact, Job suffers like the suffering servant because he is righteous. Had he not been that righteous person, God wouldn't have picked him out. You know, so he's suffering because he's righteous. The point of difference, however, and uniqueness about suffering servant here is that this one bears sins of... He stands under judgment. He bears punishment and bears sins, with the result that what he does is not just a model. What he does is also a means. It's an agent of God's justifying. Eric, you, yeah, quickly. Yeah. And I have not checked Septuagint on this, which really ought to be done in a conceptual sense, clearly. There's a lot of carryover there.